welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig. I'm here with Nicole, and Sheila is here with us for our first time. Sheila, can you just introduce yourself to the audience real quick, since this is the first time they're hearing from you?
Hi, I'm Sheila. I'm a therapist. I'm glad to be here.
Perfect. So today we are actually going to be talking about memory, right? So I don't know about you guys. Do you guys ever get the feeling that you guys are like forgetting things?
All the time.
All the time?
All the time.
Huh? Often, yes.
Especially after having kids.
So that's like a hallmark of being an adult, I feel like. But yeah. I think that's even a hallmark of being a kid, just like forgetting things all the time, right? So I think that it makes it even harder. Do you guys ever feel bad, like as a therapist, like, oh, I forgot this or I forgot that? Like, I feel like I should be better at this. Like, I took my psychology classes, my psychology 101. They told me how to remember things, and I forget things all the time. I don't know. Do you guys ever feel bad about that? Like, oh, like I should be remembering things.
I do.
Yeah.
I find that I remember things that are maybe not typical. Like, I miss the main idea sometimes. Having ADD, it's kind of interesting how my memory works. I remember great details about the state of mind of a client or what they were wearing instead of, like, the main, what it was supposed to be. And, like, names are a really bad thing that I have trouble with
memory. So that'd be a great thing if you see a client, like, 5-6 years later, you see them, and you're like, I remember a lot of things. Like, I remember the style of dress that you wear. I remember, like, the way that you look.
I know everything about you. I know your story and how your heart feels, and can't remember her name.
That must be something with being a therapist, because there's a lot of people that I've worked with in the field, including myself, that have a hard time remembering people's names, right? Mm-hmm. And that'll actually maybe be something that we touch on a little bit. So now that we can kind of all move past the part, all of us are guilty for forgetting things, right? And mm-hmm. I hate it because most of us have like that one person there in our life that feel like they remember everything, mm-hmm. and we're usually super jealous of them. I know that I have that. So let's talk a little bit about how to help you remember things. And I'm kind of wondering, even just talking to you guys right now, do you guys have any tips for things that you guys personally do that help you to be able to remember different things? If you're like, oh, I got to really remember this, or I got this grocery list and I have time to write things down, so I got to really remember this. Like, what do you guys do to try to make sure that you remember?
When I meet someone, because I do, that is one of my largest challenges. The biggest challenges that I have is trying to remember someone's name. So whenever I do, as I'm speaking with them, I will try to use their name somehow where it sounds organic.
Oh, yeah?
And I try to do it at least 5 times.
I'm trying to sit here
times.
And remember, like, did Sheila do this with me? Did she, like, say my name?
Yes, I did, and I did. And I thought of other people that I knew that had your name, mm-hmm. and I thought about things that were similar between you all. Like, oh, because I know one that has red hair and has blue eyes and was tall. And so I made those associations, and it helped.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The only part I had trouble with was it Greg or Craig at first? So that was something that I had
Lucky
to.
Lucky you. I answer to both. So wait, how did you learn that? Did you do that? Is that something you just came up on your own that – I have to do this to kind of...
I don't remember how I began doing it. I know that making correlations with things, even if the crazier they are, the more it sticks in my head. And I know there's a name for that. I can't remember what it, I can't remember what it is.
So
maybe I should make a...
Sheila is saying this. We talked about this off air, and she can't remember it now. I don't know if you guys know this or you guys can hear us. Sheila's really nervous. This is her first time on here, and she's she's really hoping that she doesn't butcher things. But don't worry, she's gonna do great. So, I love what you talked about with the associations, mm-hmm. and with our memory. So it's so important that whenever we remember anything, there's a certain process that we go through, right? And I don't know how much you guys know about this, but our brain is divided into different parts for our memory. We have our short-term or our working memory that anything that's happening right now in the moment is filtering into that short-term memory. And anything that we're trying to do as far as an activity, right? So if I'm, you know, heaven forbid, if I was outside like trying to skateboard or something like that, and I had to like, my brain had to dig back into my youth and be like, okay, how do I do this? How do I position my feet and everything? Our working memory, our short-term memory, they're both the same thing. anything that we're doing right now and all the observations, all the experiences that we're having are happening in that short-term memory. And what you're talking about with these associations are so important because they help, whenever something enters our short-term memory, it helps link it to something that's already established in our memory. Right. So if I'm sitting there thinking about, okay, I am trying to get home. What is the way that I get home? I know that whenever I go in the subdivision, I always get lost with this. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I remember in Dance Dance Revolution, whenever that came out and I was doing this, I loved it whenever I did the left, right, and forward. And you know what? That just so happens to be the direction I have to go. I have to make a left, then I make a right, then I just have to keep on going through. Right? So we can make those associations with something that's already established, right? I lied about that. I wasn't really much of a Dance Dance Revolution person, right? I was always jealous. Yeah, I was always jealous of those people that could do that, right? You'd see that like movies and TV shows and wish that you were really good at dancing. So you said you use associations to do that. I love what you said. Like I actually try to think of who is this person like, mm-hmm. who are other people like that or anything like that. So what do you do, Nicole?
I do something similar, but again, I didn't really pick up on it until I was later teens that I make what we talked about earlier. You said bizarre associations. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of that. I would keep that to myself because I'd make little
jokes. Because they sound strange. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't share it with other people, but I had a hard time memorizing things when I was young. And then actually that developed into my later teens where I was really good at memorizing things. Yeah. So that turns out to be my gift. And when we think of the hippocampus or that memory storage, I do well with same and different. Mm. So I compare and contrast a lot. That's what helps me pick up on what I used to do versus what it is. So when she's putting you in categories, that's another level of that. I think they're similar and then they're different. And so I store it in more than one place in case I have to retrieve it.
Well, I feel like you're using these terms to help with the segue of the next segment. So we talked about how we have that short-term part of our memory. We also have the long-term part. So this is the kind of way that I like to think of it. It's almost like an hourglass that's keeping time, right? And you have all the sand that goes into the top, and only a little bit gets through at a time. Well, the truth is, with our memory, we get so much input from the outside, that our brain can only pick out a very small portion of it to actually focus on. And if it focuses on it for that long of time, it will then have the chance to encode it and then store it in the long-term memory. Right. So what do we mean by encoding it? That's simply the way that our memory uses to tag a memory so that it can retrieve it later. So this is actually where the associations, right, if you're just making association with what people look like to help you remember their name or different attributes, or if you're making a bizarre association, right, like, I'm trying to think of a good bizarre association.
I used to listen to rap music would be a good one, and it's probably not appropriate to say some of the lines from that, but I was listening to one particular song when I had met a new person at school that day, and so that association was there because I was pulling up in my car listening, and so that was always there, so I would remember that name. It's bizarre. It makes no sense.
Oh, or another association. I was just thinking about this. If you meet someone, their name's Bruce, and you're like, hey, you know what? I really like that Bruce Willis actor. So now I think that Bruce is actually Bruce Willis on the side, and he's like solving some type of thing, right? It's like, you know,
not moonlighting Bruce Willis.
Right, oh yeah it's like, and you know what, whenever he gets older, he's probably gonna lose his hair, he's gonna probably look exactly like Bruce Willis. And you know what, if anything happens, I know I'm gonna be safe because he's gonna figure out how to like defeat all the bad guys, right? You know, or whatever may happen in a Die Hard movie. This is going to be like Die Hard 5 or Die Hard 6 or whatever that's getting ready to happen with Bruce here, right? So that would be an example of like a bizarre association to help you remember that. Like I can remember Bruce because I remember that because I really like Bruce Willis, and I bet you that Bruce is just like Bruce Willis or anything. So, and there's lots of examples. I love doing bizarre association for things, like especially whenever I'm trying to think that whenever we're going through school and we had to like memorize all these things. So you guys know that whenever you go through your psychology courses, you had to just memorize a huge amount of things. And you guys both went through like different like medical programs and nursing and all this stuff. So you guys had to remember tons more than I did. Right. But I always had to sit there and be like, okay, hippocampus, right? Like even that hey, you know what? I bet a hippo has a great memory, right? It, you know what? They are probably so super smart that while they're bobbing along, they're probably sitting there like, oh, I remember last time I was bobbing around this area. I remember where the fish are in here. I was like, hippos, hippocampus. Not only is it similar with that, but it's a bizarre association because I think that hippos really have good memories because they kind of look like elephants in some way, and elephants have really good memory. Mm. So I was able to actually like tie the line to help me remember that hippocampus has to do with memory. So bizarre associations are really cool. So whenever memories actually go into that long-term memory and they have that encoding process and you can actually retrieve it, that is whenever the memory comes back to working memory. And when it comes back to working memory, then you can recall it. Working memory is in your conscious brain, whereas most of the other things that occur with you are in your unconscious brain or subconscious. So I'm sitting here thinking about this, and I'm thinking about the ways that I end up memorizing things. And you know, they talk about other things, right? Like people talk about like repeating things in your head, head. Like, have you guys ever tried that?
Oh yeah.
So how many times do you guys have to repeat something until you're like, all right, I got it?
I have to say it out loud and write it. If I do both, I've got it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
How does that help?
So when I'm writing something, it's moving it from my right to my left brain, and I tend to look at it, and I'm hyper focusing mm-hmm. in on it. So I'm taking it from my implicit to explicit, and it has a meaning behind it. There's an emotional charge, so I know it's stored.
What a neurotherapist way of
Stop
saying
it.
This.
But I'm thinking, how did we get to this? You know, I don't know how else to think about it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So you're saying that for you, when you're really trying to memorize something and you try to repeat it, and you try to repeat it in different ways because that helps both sides of the brain
right.
to be able to process that, how does that help?
Well, I think, you know, so let's take a memory that maybe, again, I work in trauma. So if you have a memory, you know, a car accident's a perfect example. My police officers, they'll ask multiple people about what they just witnessed, mm-hmm. depending on the state of mind. So the amygdala, Amy, and hippocampus, hippo, Amy and hippo are working within milliseconds, you know, hundreds, thousands of milliseconds. They're compiling data from previous experiences into the now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important when you're thinking about what are you memorizing, what are you looking at. So it's pulling on associations automatically. So I want to make sure that I'm not pulling just from that, but I'm looking at left and right brain, conscious and subconscious. Mm-hmm. I want to hit all four quadrants in my mind if I mm-hmm. really need to learn the material.
Well, the wonderful thing is you're doing that, which means that you're creating more tags in the short-term memory. So let's say that I'm trying to, you know, let's go back to the hippocampus, right? Let's say I'm trying to memorize the word hippocampus. Then what I'd want to do is say hippocampus out loud, which is great because whenever you're speaking it out loud, you're also hearing your own voice say it, right? So you're activating different parts of the brain with speaking, hearing it, I'm writing it down, and I'm repeating it, mm-hmm. which means that I'm getting several different inputs, which maybe I don't really remember quite the word, but I can kind of remember writing it. Mm-hmm. Like, my, you know, it's like if I give myself a, you know, if I put a pencil in my hand, I can kind of write it, like, oh, yeah, hippocampus,
yeah.
right? Or someone is talking about a hippo, and I'm like, you know what else has good memory? Or you know what? Hippos have good memories, and we have a hippocampus, right? Mm-hmm. So it's creating more opportunities, and that's really what you want, is create many opportunities whenever you're trying to memorize something for that tag to really be expanded.
Mm-hmm. And learning style, when you think about that. Yeah. So I love that you said that, Craig, because as you think that, you know, when I was growing up in school, it was primarily auditory, mm-hmm. and the average person only gets about 30% of auditory. So I find if I'm hyper-focused, I can get a lot more. And if I'm not, if I'm having kind of a slow brain day or I'm just not present or it's not very interesting to me, I'm not getting it. If I'm at a neuroscience conference, people are like, oh, my gosh, I didn't get that. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like hanging on every word because I love it and it's exciting to me. So that chemical and that emotional state that you're in has a huge role in whether you store it and keep it and maintain it, how high of a value it is. Does that make sense?
That makes really good sense. It also hits this other part of me that I get a lot of people, because I work with a lot of adolescents as well, and whenever they talk to me, they're like, oh, gosh, Craig, class is just so boring. And that's something I can relate to, but it's also something I have a hard time relating to. So I understand it because I've been in classes that are really boring, But whenever I was growing up, I would always imagine that whatever piece of information that I was going to have was going to be part of like a trivia question that I was going to get asked.
Playing games. So, that's always good.
Oh yeah. So I was like, I got to really remember this because this could be on some type of trivia that could be really important. Right. Especially because like when I was growing up, you know, that was whenever you had a huge surge in game shows. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is coming out. Like Wheel of Fortune's been there forever. Right. So you're kind of like, all right, I need to remember this. What if I'm on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and this is the $1 million question or something? So it would actually be like a little game that I'd play with myself that would make every piece of information I had high priority, which meant that it
also... Yeah, you would chemically change it, right, mm-hmm. by doing that. You're creating that dopamine and that chemical combination.
Definitely, you know? Definitely. Yeah. So how many times do you have to say something before it's memorized?
It depends on what it is.
Oh,
my
yeah.
interest level, really. But I would say a good 5 to 9, but I also like writing it at the same time.
Yeah.
But depending on the subject, like when I was in North Carolina, I took a medical transcription class.
Yeah.
And they had a funny way of helping you remember. So they would put things up on the board, the pictures, and they would be crazy. They would have us try to figure out what the word should be, and we came up with all kinds of crazy mm-hmm. things, but we were all engaged, and that was most important. And then they would put it up and explain what it actually mean, but they would break it down so it would help it stand out in your memory, even though it was yeah. crazy and it didn't make any sense, had zero correlation to what it was that you were learning. You remembered the word. By doing that, I was able to take that when I was in grad school and apply that to medical aspects because, again, that's another class that I'm not super, wasn't super familiar with, but it made learning.
I dare you not know that going in.
I know, right? Go figure. But it did make learning a lot more fun, even if it was just you and maybe a few other people that were kind of coming up with things together that would help with the memorization.
I think what you're saying, even just kind of rewinding back, like whenever they show you the picture, they would have you guys guess at what mm-hmm. it was. So going back to like the value of finding out what it was, because like, oh, am I right? Or did I get this?
Mm-hmm,
or,
well, mm-hmm.
gosh, I had to have gotten closer to that person, right?
Right.
Like all of a sudden the value of that piece of information goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime the value of a piece of information goes up, like, right, every time that I'm like, hey, I have to remember something. Like, I'm glad I don't have to do this a lot anymore. But if I had to, like, memorize someone's phone number, like, I'd be like, if I don't memorize this phone number, it's going to be like that scene in a movie where if I don't have this phone number, the bomb is going to go off.
Oh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all of a sudden, it has become high-value information, and it is now easier for me to memorize that because I'm like, okay, 314 da 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 or whatever to mm-hmm. be able to memorize it. I'm like, okay, I would defuse that bomb and it would be great.
Yeah.
It's interesting because before we were talking about this memory, I didn't think about how I did any of this until you're talking about like the high value.
What stood out with Sheila when she just spoke, I thought that was really good with the visual. I think a lot of people are visual learners.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all incorporate all of the learning styles, and definitely seeing it, hearing it, doing it definitely mm-hmm. helps. And as we sit here, I'm looking at Sheila talking about the visual in the conversation just a minute ago on the class in the classroom was really helpful. But as I look at her planner, it's all scheduled and organized by color. And so I think that's really good when you're thinking of memory. She can remember writing it and squiggling little lines around those colors or dates or different, you know, I do this on my Google Calendar. I have different colors for different, like my work schedule versus, you know, my classes I take or my kids' schedule or things like that. So that's really helpful, you know, when you're looking at visual.
I don't do that at all.
You will soon.
I know. Now I'm like, wow, that's actually a great idea.
Wait till you have kids and lots of activities. You can't keep it all going.
Oh, I hope my kid will just stay home, not do anything. Oh, gosh, I think I already talked to you guys about how I hope I'm not like a baseball parent. And if you are, God bless you, because, like, it is a lot. Actually, like, hockey parents, too. Gosh, it's a lot. We were talking a little bit off air, and Sheila was sharing us with whenever, like, memory kind of gets blocked. And I think that's important because it gets blocked with a lot of us, right? I know that for me, whenever I was growing up, I had a certain amount of like test anxiety, which like now that I'm older, I'm like, gosh, I wish I could go back and like take all those high school tests mm-hmm. because it would have been very different now that I know what it is and I know what to do. But can you just talk with us a little bit about like what happens with you when you're trying to remember something and like it's really hard?
Well, we had a moment earlier when we were kind of discussing what we were going to talk about, and I was telling you about the tips and tricks that I utilized when I was in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, I was calling it medical aspects, and I think it was because my nerves were so heightened about doing this in general. This isn't, I typically don't do podcasts. I don't like the sound of my voice, so it makes me even more anxious knowing that this is being recorded. So I start to freak out a little bit. So when we were having that conversation, it didn't even dawn on me until it was already going, and then I was sitting here, and I was like, oh, it wasn't medical aspects in North Carolina. And around that time, as you were speaking, you had mentioned, are you ever, you know, initially it was with your clients or something, and there's something that you realize, oh, I wish I had remembered that. Why didn't I think of that? And I had that moment. I had that moment as we were all sitting here chatting where it was like, it wasn't medical aspects in North Carolina. It was transcribing, medical transcription class, and Maryville was medical aspects. And I just had this whole ordeal in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was flowing with what you were saying, but then I was like, oh, I'm keeping this to myself, and I'm like, oh. But then I had to self-talk and say, you know what? You're anxious. This isn't your bag. And
how dare me not be as calm as Craig or Nicole?
I know.
Bro, I'm not calm. I'm always anxious.
I would say, especially me. This is probably like my 200th podcast between this one and my hobby podcast. But what you're saying, I think, is so key. So, like, whenever we think about anxiety, and if you don't really know much about anxiety, we have a couple great anxiety episodes that we've done earlier on. Whenever we have anxiety, a lot of times people's thought production increases drastically during that. So I just want you to imagine this, right? If you are taking in information from the outside, and you're just kind of like thinking, like, you know, if you're walking along a beach, you're like, oh, things are all relaxed and everything like that. You're probably not thinking a lot, but there are some thoughts going through your head, right? Your brain is a thought-producing organ, right? So that's kind of what it does. Now, we're on that beach, and all of a sudden this plane crashes in front of me hundreds of feet, and you know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Then all of a sudden, my anxiety, my stress start to go up. So guess what happens to my thought production? It goes up. As my thought production goes up, the room that is in my short-term memory decreases. So if the room in my short-term memory decreases, guess what happens if I try to recall something? There isn't enough room for me to recall it. So it actually gets blocked. So I love watching this. Whenever I was learning about when I was doing the drug counseling, I was learning about how drugs affect our memory. We talk about how marijuana affects the memory. And one of the ways that it does is it affects the part of our brain called the, I'm having the block right now, right? Yeah. No, it is our endocannabinoid system. And our endocannabinoid system is responsible for calming us down. And one of the aspects of it that marijuana taps into is it actually reduces the capacity of our working memory. Because if you have a smaller capacity for it, then you can't be worried about as many things. Like, it just gets flushed out. Like, you cannot hold on to the thoughts as much. So you actually can't get worried about things as much. So it's a wonderful thing that our brain does whenever it's trying to calm us down. Mm-hmm. But it becomes really hard because whenever people use those types of drugs, for some people, if they can't actually hold on to the thoughts, they cannot do simple tasks. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching these videos of kids that were high trying to like jump across this like small little ditch, and none of them could do it because they could not, like, they had gotten so high, and they're laughing, they're talking and everything. There's too much stuff flooding their short-term memory that their brain did not have enough room to recall how to jump properly and how to land on the other side. It wasn't a big ditch or anything like that, so they weren't in any danger. Mm-hmm. But even just like observing that and how that was, you're like, wow, their short-term memory is flooded. They actually can't bring this in. Like, could you imagine trying to give people that this is happening to you, like, really anxious, here's a bicycle. Like, go and try to ride the bike, right? You can't do it as fluidly, right? You just can't recall as fluidly. I think the same thing happens whenever we end up getting anxious.
Mm-hmm. I like that you said that, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about PTSD or ADHD mm-hmm. with that. Same part of the prefrontal cortex and that anxiety is kicking up, and so people can't retain the information. Like, I'm either flooded and talking really fast, or I'm like a machine and I'm downloading data right. like a computer, or nobody's home. And I have a really hard time kind of navigating that, because that executive functioning is not working, and that happens a lot with drugs. So depending on the kind of brain that you have, the learning style, your personality, all those things really affect memory and how we encode and process what we're taking in, you know, especially the amygdala, for instance, taking in all of the data we're scanning as we're inputting it into the memory.
I'm having a memory association right now, right? So let me go back to the example of the hourglass we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So imagine that you have the hourglass and it's open, right? And sand is going in it. It's going in at a constant rate because your brain's constantly taking in information. Now, if you're someone that has ADHD, imagine that there is a ton more sand coming in there, right? A normal brain with sand coming at a constant rate, you may have like a shovel that's coming in from the outside and it just throws it out, because your brain will filter out things that are basically non-essential, right? Like, my brain, since we've gotten in here, I could not tell you, if you held a gun to my head, what the color of the lamps are in here. Right? I can't, because my brain has labeled that as irrelevant information. I can't tell you what the brain of the TV is. It's over to my left. In fact, I can't even tell you the different things are over in the corner. I can't even remember what the color of the the extension cord is. It's going from the outlet to here or anything. Right? Because my brain's like, that not relevant. Right? Mm-hmm. Someone that has all that stuff is kind of being shoveled out. Like, that sand is being shoveled out, so there's less sand to actually go through and to filter down and go into that long-term memory. Someone that has ADHD, it's like someone took that shovel and threw it away. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, yeah, now you're getting a shit ton of sand, and like all of it's in there.
It's a tornado.
And, oh, yeah. And sometimes, like, the sand that's trying to go into the long-term memory is getting clogged up, and you got to, like, shake the hourglass right. up to, like, get it going. Right?
Hey, that feels like me this morning.
I shake you all the time.
That's how I feel this morning. Yeah. And that can make it a challenge when you have to, especially before an exam, like people that, you know, mm-hmm. they've studied the information. I worked with a client yesterday, mm-hmm. and she tests in the 99th percentile. She does exceptionally well, but she has test anxiety. And so to kind of help her go through that process, that she's just doing what she's always been doing, instead of it's the big day of the test, mm-hmm. because she has the habit, she has the knowledge, the information. Mm-hmm. It's about keeping her not in that state of anxiety so that she can retrieve the information. That's the process that we're focused on, rather than the end result. So same thing with memory and, you know, ADHD, anxiety, PTSD, all these different things.
Well, it's so interesting too, is if you talk about something like PTSD, and like we've talked about during our PTSD series, or trauma series, is that sometimes the memory actually isn't there. It actually gets severed from your ability to recall it, which actually happens with a lot of our memories. So like the encoding process is definitely not always a perfect process. For some people that have memory-related issues, they actually degrade over time, or your retrieval mechanism can be really messed up. And the encoding process, that's why it's so important to have so many different ways that mm-hmm. things can be encoded. That's why, I don't know if you guys ever remember this. I remember going through school and they're like, hey, eat a peppermint while you're,
yes.
or like have a, have a mint. That's what it was. Have a mint while you're studying for a test, and then take one when you're not. Well, that makes good sense, because then you're encoding just another layer there, and by reproducing those results. So what we're saying is, if you're going to take a test in a classroom, study in a classroom too, right? Because as many of the things that are the same, it makes it easier to recall, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what that means is, like, us for our adult lives, we just have to remember everything while we're in a chaotic environment, because if we don't, then we're not going to remember anything.
Right? Or train. Find ways that work for you, because when you do end up in a chaotic environment and you have to make quick decisions. Like me, I can have high anxiety, like with this situation, but there are certain things where I might feel anxious, but when I'm needed and I know I'm needed, there's a shift that takes place, and I go into a different realm. I don't know what it is, but there's zero anxiety. I'm focused. My heartbeat decreases, because we've checked this. And I get very, like, whatever needs to be done, I'm there. And so I know I can make it happen.
Sounds like hyper-focus, and you're going into procedural memory because you have that muscle memory that's there, which is awesome. And I've watched her go into that mode. It's really fantastic to see that. I think a lot of women can do that. You know, I think when you have kids, you know, we tend to be a little more nervous with babies than some of the husbands. And so we get a little neurotic, and then we're like, oh, okay, this is all right. It's over. And then, you know, kind of bring it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Talking to me about procedural memory. All right, there's procedural and sequential memory. So when we're looking at procedural memory, that is whenever we're doing a certain set of tasks. So if I'm getting into my car, procedural memory takes place and I turn on the vehicle and I adjust the mirrors or anything like that if you have to. Or if I'm thinking of procedural memory for any time that there is a situation where you have knowledge and it has to happen in a very specific way, procedural memory actually ends up taking place, where sequential memory is a little bit different. This would actually fit a little more with the car example. So I was incorrect with that.
But they're both subconscious is what I'm thinking as you talk. You know, we're in that alpha. It's like a program that's programmed in, like you talk about. We already have the software downloaded, so to speak. Is that what you mean, Craig?
Well, procedural memory is something where in an emergency situation or situation where you have to make quick decisions, you've already had those connections before. So that kind of clicks into place to take care of it, right? It's that unconscious, that automatic response that ends up happening. Where sequential memory is like how you remember numbers: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right? It's easier for you, or like your, actually, this is great with your alphabet. Right? You can say your entire alphabet. But let's say that I was like, "Hey, can you say the alphabet? Say it backwards." Right? Well, you've memorized the alphabet going forward, so it makes it easier for you to know that after B comes C. Because every time that I say B, I know that C comes next, right? So anytime that we're doing something sequentially, the stimulus that happens or whatever memory recall happens before automatically initiates the second one. So I know that my phone number, 636-278-0552, happens like this. But if you're like, hey, can you say the last four digits of your phone number, then the first three, then the second three? I'd have to think about it for a moment, right? Because all of a sudden you're interrupting my sequential memory,
right?
The procedural memory, I think, is really important for anyone that does any type of emergency work, and all of us can kind of flip over into that.
Yeah.
It's anything that you do that you practice again and 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 again, right?
Your military, your first responders.
Well, even like people who do different types of sports or athletics, like your just general ability to react to things and to know exactly what to do in those moments. Right. See, when you're talking about this, I'm so glad that you said that. I wasn't even thinking procedural and sequential memory. I was like, oh, man, it sounds kind of like you're in flow. Right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you're just doing things. You don't have to make any decision. Your feeling is like just fairly neutral. And it's like, I just do. I am in the moment.
Yep.
And, well, it sounded like alpha state at first. And then I started hearing, nope, we're not in alpha anymore. Now we're shifting. So that's kind of neat when you think of brainwaves too and what state of mind. Because when you talk about ADD, that's what's interesting for people with either ADD and PTSD. They're able to switch into that flow state even when they're hyperreactive, even when they're anxious. They're able to turn that on. So it's really incredible how the brain works as far as memory and being in different situations or having this process. You know, if your child is sick and you have to race them, you're not thinking about putting the car in the ignition and all the little details. It's so procedural and sequential, like you said, but we could even deviate and stick with the procedure out of order to get the child to the hospital. Do you know what I mean? It's so interesting how we can just go into these modes and we don't really take much time to think about it or how it works.
I'm sitting here thinking about this, and if I'm someone that's listening to this, I'm like, wow, it feels like you guys are kind of going over a lot of memory stuff. I just need brass tacks, like how to help me remember stuff, right? So I think one of the things we're saying is repetition, right? And whenever you're doing repetition, you need to memorize things in different ways. Don't just think it in your head, say it out loud. Don't just think it in your head and say it out loud. Write it down. Do that several times. I know for me, you guys were talking about like, oh, I need to do that. It's like 7, 9 times. I'm in my head like, shoot, I need to do that like 20 or 30 times, right? And I think that's the thing, is it's different for different people, right? There's no magic number. Then if you're wanting to remember stuff, associations is probably one of the most useful things, right? Whether or not it's just normal associations or bizarre associations or anything like that. I don't know if any of you guys have witnessed people that are able to, you shuffle a card, deck of cards, and they just look through it, and then you shuffle it up, and they can put it right back in that order that they had it before. Mm-hmm. Well, they're able to do that is because they create an association. Each card is a word, or each card is some type of piece of a story, or some type of internal line that they tell themselves. All 52 cards are. So anytime that they are doing those cards and they see it the first time, they're creating that script, and then it makes it easy for them to go back to that script. Right, so they're using a memory association technique. So associations are super strong. They're super easy to do. That's how most people that memorize things. Like, you think about people that like memorize song lyrics and different things like that. Like, a lot of the stuff that they're able to do, it can go into that sequential memory and everything like that.
Well, I think that's tempo and rhythm has a lot to do with it, or acronyms. You know, when you start thinking about all these different things that people do, I think that's huge. I think people use acronyms, particularly in business, day long. And in our field, you know, same thing. EFT, you mean emotionally focused therapy or emotion focused technique? Like, which one is it? You know, that you got to think about all these different acronyms.
Oh, yeah. And whenever people are able to remember those different things, there's also another thing that we haven't talked about. We talked about it in a different episode when we're talking about habits, right? And that's the, it's not bulking, but
chunking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can do certain chunking in different areas in this regard too, whereas you use chunking to make it easier for you to make habits better. You can do this in a certain area. Like, so whenever, if I think of the field of psychology as a whole, and whenever I'm creating some type of internal dialogue about it, right? And I have like Mini Craig in his therapist form. What does he look like, right? So like in this environment, I am a very particular way. And whenever I'm memorizing things, I'm like this professor with my glasses on a chalkboard, and I'm writing down things, right? I'm writing about the hippocampus, or I'm writing about, this is neurobiology, or this is, how epigenetics works, or anything like that. And if I am going to integrate a new piece of information in, what I will do is introduce that into that theme that already exists, right? Or if I'm introducing a lot of information, I will introduce it in a way that all of it is paired together, right? So if you're trying to memorize, if you're going through the Simpsons episodes, right, there are a ton of them. Well, it becomes really easy to integrate new characters into there because you already have a whole world of characters created. So you can introduce any number of characters into there, and you already have the information, right? If you are someone that's really good at astronomy and you really understand how planets work and all these different things, it's easier to introduce a bunch of new information into something that's kind of already created for yourself. So when you think of chunking and you want to interconnect different things, so like let's say that I'm really good at astronomy, not so good at math, it's a bad pairing, right? So then I want to relate everything that I learned with astronomy with math so that it makes it easier for me to learn a large amount of math, right? So I'm creating association between multiple things. And that is how I memorize almost everything, is in large chunks of information. Cause I don't know about you guys, I'm a binger when it comes to information.
Yes.
I know there's certain personality types that are like information hoarders, right? So like whenever I go into like that information hoarding mode, I was just thinking about a book that I read not too long ago. It's like it's probably like 20 books in this series so far. And I had gone about 2 years without reading it, any of them. So I was behind by like 3 or 4 books at this time. So it was really easy to get caught back up because I'd already had all the world and all the things integrated. So by the time I read it and I started to get a few things, all of a sudden it all comes back, right? I got off track a little bit, right? So if we're consolidating a lot of this, association is really important. You can take advantage of different things like sequential and procedural memories, but those are mostly unconscious, right? So if you're trying to memorize things, make sure you're doing the repetition and make sure you're using the association. Have fun with bizarre associations, right? Mm-hmm. If there is anything that you take from this, have fun with the bizarre associations. I think those are 10 times stronger than any type of normal associations that you
do. In the environment, like we talked about, you know, priming, like if you're going to have the candy or test taking, or like when I'm going to read a book, I have like my cozy blanket, I have like my lighting's like everything is all set up so I can really immerse myself in that information. So making yourself, priming yourself, so to speak, or priming the brain and all of the senses to integrate the information is really important.
And then making it a higher stakes, or making the value of what you're trying to memorize better, right? If you're super bored and you got to remember something, you're just not, right? Your brain's going to find more interesting things to focus on. So you have to make whatever it is that you're, you know, trying to learn interesting in some type of way. I told you about some of the ways that I do that, and maybe that'll work for you. Maybe you need to find a different way, right? You may think that you're not a really creative person, but you'd be really surprised about the different things that you come up with. And that's why bizarre associations are so fun. You get a chance to exercise that creativity, and you get a chance to like really kind of like break out of the norm and make things less boring all the time, right? So I hope that you guys found this episode helpful, and maybe it'll help you remember things, and hopefully you guys will actually remember this episode, because if not, oh gosh, we should do some type of like bizarre association.
Yeah, we got to end with one. You have one, Sheila?
Okay, so let me help you guys out, right? If you guys are trying to remember this episode, I want you guys to remember that whenever you go on a roller coaster and you're going up and down and all around, that think of it just like your memory. It is going around and it lands at the station and then gets shot back out again, and you want it to return to the station. So you always want it to come in a loop. Every time that you remember something, you want it to go around in the loop, and then whenever you retrieve it, you can. And there's ups and downs, and sometimes it gets lost, and sometimes you go around a turn, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's creaking. Is this memory quite right? Is this really safe? Is this really correct? That's pretty normal, because there's memory degradation is normal. And I want you to think about, when you're trying to consider this episode, that if this roller coaster was not able to return and the memory was lost forever, the only way that they would actually be able to get it back is if that person that was at the front was able to say something or do something to get that roller coaster to come back. They're able to pull this lever. So just imagine that roller coaster going off and it's floating around and everything. And that kid that's there, that's like pilot, you know, that's making sure that everything is good. He's like, hey, come here, roller coaster, come back. And the roller coaster didn't come back. He's like, oh, wait, but the roller coaster has to be red. The roller coaster has to be blue. It's going up and down. He's telling you all the turns that it has to go. See, memory is actually not like a roller coaster. In fact, what I just said makes no sense with it. But if you can remember roller coaster floating off the track and the kid that's sitting there working, like calling the roller coaster back, that doesn't make any sense, Craig. Oh, but memories can go up and down. They can degrade. They can take a hard turn and they can come back. They get sent out and they come back. Oh yeah, by the way, they're talking about associations. Oh, not only with associations, but there's that procedural and that sequential memory too. That's an interesting thing. So they can be as ludicrous as you want, and you want them to be ludicrous sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. You actually want them to sometimes have nothing to do with what it is. Like, hippos have nothing to do with the hippocampus besides sounding similar. But it was something that helps you remember things. So make bizarre associations strange and make bizarre associations weird and have fun with it. Right. I want to thank you guys for joining me in this episode. I want to thank you guys for listening. And I hope that you guys enjoyed Sheila on her first episode.
We always enjoy Sheila's company.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. And until next time, I wish you guys well. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. Music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.